This meeting of the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability is called to order. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Burke? Senator Frerichs?
Here.
Senator Kaler?
Here.
Senator Murphy? Representative Nekritz?
Yes.
Representative Poe?
Here.
Representative Riley?
Here.
Senator Rose? Senator Severson? Representative Tracy?
Here.
Senator Trotter?
Here.
Representative Tryon?
Here.
Nine.
With nine members being present and there being a quorum, we will begin our meeting today. We'll start first with representatives from CMS. We'll present an overview of the fiscal year 2015 group insurance program and updates on the current program. If you please introduce yourselves before you speak, we'd appreciate it very much.
Good morning, Chairman Frerichs, Chairwoman Tracy, and members of CAGFA. I'm Simone McNeil, Acting Director of Central Management Services. Central Management Services is pleased to present a snapshot of the benefit program with an emphasis on savings. We recognize the tough economic choices that have to be made and would like to assure the Commission we are doing our part. This past year, over 117,000 retiree members and dependents were enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan. Based on the sample of the month of February, savings are outpacing projections. Analysis will continue monthly. During the upcoming benefit choice period, all employees will receive information about the wellness benefits available to them. Management and labor continue to meet to identify additional wellness initiatives. Benefits is currently evaluating plan design changes that encourage healthy behavior, thus reducing costs. In fiscal year 2014, $300 million was generated by member contributions, plan design changes, and the Medicare Advantage implementation. The forecast for fiscal year 2015 is $435 million in savings, again, looking towards Medicare Advantage savings, plan design changes, member contributions, and union management initiatives. In 2016, $53 million in savings is projected in wellness and continued Medicare Advantage savings. Finally, state employees recognize the importance of saving for the future. In all National Association of Government-Defined Contribution Plans, the average participation rate is 26%. Including all universities, the participation rate in the state of Illinois is 29%. Without the universities rolled in, the participation rate for state employees is 49% in our deferred compensation plans. Thank you. And Lynn Carter, our deputy for benefits, will take over from here.
Good morning. I'm Lynn Carter. I am the acting deputy director for the Bureau of Benefits. Thank you for allowing us to be here today. As Dr. McNeil mentioned, we are entering the benefits choice period May 1st through June 2nd with choices effective July 1st. We are working very hard to make that benefits choice period a positive experience for the employees that have to go through it. We have 15 benefit fairs scheduled. There are 24 plan design changes, most involving increasing deductibles and raising copays. These were all items that were negotiated with the union as a part of the new contract. I know each of you have a copy of the draft benefit choice book that's about to go out, and all of those changes are outlined on page 4 of that book. Retiree contributions are going up a little bit. All employee benefit vendors are under contract through at least 2015, fiscal 2015, so there should be no disruption there. There are no vendor changes this year, so we're looking forward to a smooth benefit change period, benefit choice period. As Director McNeil mentioned, we are also focusing on wellness. During the benefit choice period, all employees will be given information about wellness programs that already exist within their existing plans. We started wellness by surveying the vendors that we currently have under contract, Cigna and the various HMOs and the like, and found out that they all have some type of wellness programs that are currently a part of our offering. Less than 1% of our employees currently participate in any of those wellness programs. So we decided that our very first step is we're going to educate the employees about the programs that are already out there. These are stop smoking programs, weight loss programs, obviously the flu shot program, and the core of the wellness program is health risk assessments for all employees. We are going to be very much encouraging employees in the coming months to participate in a health risk assessment, which is the first step in any wellness program. When we have our benefit meetings with the representatives of the various state agencies coming up 2 weeks from today, wellness will be the focus of that meeting. All of the vendors who will be there have been asked to focus on the wellness programs they already have in place that we can tap into, and there will be additional information passed out to the employees as part of the benefit choice period to inform them and hopefully get them engaged in wellness programs that they can start today. In addition to that, we have the Labor Management Wellness Committee that was formed as a part of the union negotiation last year. We've had one meeting with them, and we're meeting again in early May to discuss various options that we can look at for additional programs to add to come up with some of the savings that were identified during that negotiation. We want to encourage plan designs that will encourage healthy behaviors, and we've looked at what some other states are doing in that regard and are evaluating some various potential plan designs in that regard. We went through the Medicare Advantage enrollment at the end of last year. We had a very short time frame to roll that out and get it done. We did outreach to the impacted group. We had 89 seminars in 1 month. At some point, we were doing three a day. We did them on Saturday. We did them on Sunday. We did them at night. We reached 50,000 retirees out of the pool of 120,000 through personal seminars. So a huge amount of people actually were able to attend a seminar and get one-on-one assistance in filling out their forms. We posted the video of the seminar on the website for people to watch if they could do that. They received multiple mailings. We met with individuals one-on-one, both at the both at the seminars and at the benefits office in Springfield. We set up tables down in the lobby for people to come in and meet with us. We had a special toll-free hotline for people to call. We made thousands of outbound calls to people who we hadn't heard from. At the end of the day, 117,331 members and dependents were enrolled. There was a lot of angst about going into a Medicare Advantage program from that population, but we believe that now that most of the people understand it or are beginning to understand it and how it may work, that it is coming to have much greater acceptance among that population. In the past year, we also completed the workers' compensation outsourcing that was mandated by the legislature last year. In May of last year, we transferred 21,821 files to the third-party administrator. As of March 31st, we have 6,969 active files today. Thanks to a cash influx from the comptroller at the end of the year last year, we paid down the medical bill backlog. We made 54,315 payments of $37 million and entirely paid off the backlog. Now, The cash has been dribbling in, especially since the first of the year, so we are starting to build up a little backlog again that we don't want to do since we were successful in paying that backlog down at least. But we're hoping to work with the comptroller so that won't happen. We are in discussions with the union regarding implementing a preferred provider program for workers' compensation claims. The last thing I would say is I'm 5 weeks on the job, so be gentle with me. The biggest wonderful surprise I've had since I took this position is the great staff we have at the Bureau of Benefits, many of whom are here today, and we are committed to answering whatever questions this committee may have.
Thanks. Would the clerk please add Representative Burke and Senator Rose to the roll? Senator Kaler.
The question I have is, do we incentivize good risk behaviors in terms of the premium for insurance?
That is something that is, currently we do not. Every person who is in a certain category, depending on what plan you choose and how many dependents you have, pays the same. But that is part of the focus of our upcoming wellness program is, and as I said, we've looked at what other states have done, both either in terms of reward or punishment. We'll probably go the reward route in
right.
terms of, you know, for wellness behaviors that you do, you may get some kind of reduced premium. And that's something that we are looking into very much right now.
Okay, thanks.
Representative Nekritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the workers' compensation claims, are those claims the 6,000 or something that are
yes,
are those things are not that are now resolved and behind us? Because I know we were sitting out there with just like an ungodly number of claims for the
well,
longest time.
We transferred 21,000.
Right.
We are down to about 7,000. I think we will.
So is that 7,000 we still have in
yes.
house?
Yes. Some of those are claims where people have lifetime awards mm-hmm. and all they are doing is getting a check from us monthly, but most of them are active claims. What we seem to have, once we were able to close down the 21,000 and get down to truly active claims, either ongoing or we seem to have plateaued at about 7,000 active. That seems to be about the number we're going to be at.
And then what's the 21,000 that we transferred to?
The 21,000 were claims that were open at the time we transferred. Working with our partner TriStar, who is the administrator, we aggressively closed 14,000 claims.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I just have a few questions following up on some questions I had last fall. What is the status of the Supplemental Medicare Advantage RFP?
The RFP has been drafted. It is done from our standpoint. We have sent it to the CPO for his review, and it is currently in his office.
Okay. Do you know how many counties are going to be included in that?
48.
48. And how'd you come up with that number?
Those are the counties that did not have any HMO bid on them in the prior procurement.
So, and that's why you limited it to them?
Yes.
Any idea how many lives there are in those 48 counties?
I can get you that number.
Okay. Do you know the numbers of the current enrollment in United and Aetna and Humana?
I do. If you'll let me find a different sheet of paper. I have the percentages here. 92% of all Medicare Advantage enrollees are enrolled in UnitedHealthcare, 5%
okay.
in Coventry, and 3% in Humana.
Okay, but you don't know how many are enrolled?
92% of 117,000. So if I was better at math, I could tell you that answer.
No.
Oh, wait. I'm
no.
sorry. I do have that. 87,100 are enrolled in UnitedHealthcare. 4,500 are enrolled in Coventry, and 2,980 are enrolled in Humana. Members.
Those are members of the enrolled in Medicare Advantage?
Yes.
Okay. Excuse me, Senator. Okay. Do you know what the projected enrollment was?
There were 120-some thousand eligibles.
Excuse me, repeat that a second.
120-some thousand eligibles.
Okay, 120-some thousand eligibles. Now, the information given to COGVA had a total number of 65,000 enrolled in Medicare Advantage plans. Any idea what the difference in those numbers is?
No, we have 94,523 members enrolled in 22.
Employees and the larger number is all lives,
including dependents, right?
Yeah.
So 94,000 members, 22,000 dependents.
Okay, no difference. So with the numbers fairly significantly below what was projected, have you considered extending the RFP to a larger number of counties?
I don't know that the I'm not sure the number is significantly below what we thought would enroll. I wasn't here at the time, but if 120 something thousand were eligible and 117,000 enrolled, that's a pretty high percentage of enrollees. The idea was to give each member a choice of a PPO or an HMO in every county.
Okay. How have you done, what kind of complaints have you received from enrollees? Do you track that?
We do track calls, types of calls. We had a lot of issues early on with people who didn't understand the plan design, people who didn't understand why they were being, I would guess, we received an enormous amount of calls in a three-month period. During that three-month period, our call figure is usually around 8,000. During that period, it was over 26,000. Additionally, and that doesn't even count the 800 number we set up. That was just our usual call centers getting those numbers. I think the majority of calls were related to a lack of understanding about the program.
Okay. Senator Stevenson.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome. I think looking at the number of calls we received as well, most of those, the concerns or the complaints were just over the fact that now there are more co-pays. It wasn't really complaints about the network standpoint because
right.
It's the uniqueness of it being an open network.
Right.
I think that the terminology was also confusing for people because when you think of an Advantage plan, you think of networks. In this case, it's open, and so once they realized that they could still use their provider, I think those issues were resolved. But
right.
It was just over the co-pays and things, which that was all negotiated, which had nothing to do with the network issue. So I think from that standpoint, it's been we've not had a lot of complaints at all. So I think that's worked out as good as we could have expected it was going to work out. You talk about the backlog of payments. So, you're saying we're current on? Would that be for on the Q-chip as
that's,
well?
That's
as
on, no, that's on the workers' comp
workers
backlog.
Comp. Okay,
yeah,
where are
that's
we?
That's only on the workers' comp backlog.
Where are we? What's our backlogs and on the health side for the health providers?
On the Q-chip plan, as of this morning, we are paying bills through June 17th of 2013. And on other programs, we are paying through February 11th of 2015.
February 11th?
13, excuse me, 2013.
So Q-chip, we're paying June of
last year.
Of 13.
And other plans, we're paying February of last year.
Paying February of last year. And so, and that's including reimbursing on HMOs as well?
Yes.
Okay. And then we have agreements then with those that we're paying these carriers interest?
They are subject to the Timely Payment Act.
Okay, and how much are we paying out? Do you know how much we paid out in interest payments to those carriers?
Marcia, Austin, do you have that number?
Yeah, Austin Bates, I'm acting assistant director at CMS, and we're paying approximately $100 million a year in prompt pay and timely pay interest.
Okay. All right, and what is the intent on getting that down this year?
The GRF request that we made of $1.475 billion was enough to keep the backlog flat. So it keeps the backlog flat at about $1.5 billion. So we would need a supplemental appropriation of $1.5 billion to pay down the backlog.
Okay. So with... All right. It's just obviously it's frustrating from a consumer standpoint when they get an EOB that's a year old, and then they try to determine from that EOB what is their portion or not their portion. Doctor's offices already have cleared and closed their books and trying to figure out what they're supposed to do. It certainly creates a problem, and it's frustrating that we have more revenue than ever before coming into the state, and yet we expand other programs, but we don't pay bills for the existing ones. And it looks like there's no intent from the administration to get the bills caught up this year if we're going to keep it the same backlog. So that's a concern. Lastly, you talked about from the wellness standpoint that we're going to try the reward options first. Are there any talks about the disincentives or using negative incentives as opposed to positive incentives to get wellness results? Obviously, in the business world, the positive incentives don't work, and most companies have done away with that, but the negative ones get significant savings. And so is there a reason why we're not looking or negotiating those options?
Like, I guess to some point, it's how you define it. You could say that a lower premium is a positive incentive, whereas you don't get a lower premium is a negative incentive. Any negative incentives obviously would have to be negotiated with the union. And everything is on the table at this point. We have not ruled anything out. The union, we've had one meeting with the union so far, and it's something that the state has never focused on before at all. As you know, I said there's 1% participation currently in programs that currently exist. So we're hoping that a combination of a lot of different things will help drive behavior, but of course it's sort of amorphous. You don't know the heart attack that didn't happen.
I guess I would encourage you, when you look at those, look at not just what other states are doing, but look at what's being done in the private sector and their success, because they may have a little better track record than what looking
right
at what other states are doing. So I would just encourage you to also, in your discussions, bring in the private sector and ask what's working for them as well.
The main reason we had focused mainly on public sector is I spent most of my life in the private sector, was involved in some wellness programs at different times, and they cost money. You know, I don't know that the state can, at this point, justify building gyms in the Stratton building and subsidizing healthy eating.
Those are the positive ones.
Right.
And obviously in the business world, and we've done that ourselves, but
right,
when you implement those positive programs like gym memberships, the ones who join the gym memberships are the ones who are going to join anyways. But when you go to employers and when you go to employees and say, starting next month, it's going to cost you $50 a month more for your health insurance until you go get
right
your wellness exam and you bring it into us and show us you had your wellness, that's a negative incentive.
Right.
And it's incredible how the compliance works so well when you do that.
That gets people's attention, doesn't it?
It gets
yes
their attention. It works. And
right,
so that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. If you really want results instead of just feel good, look at what really works in the business world as opposed to just looking at what states have been doing.
Well,
but
we really want to find what really works. So.
Senator Rose.
Thanks. I want to make sure I understand what happened here, because on page 17 of the book, the numbers you guys gave CAGFA was that number of participants for Medicare Advantage was 65,114. You guys now say it's 117. So what you're saying is that this number did not include dependents. Is that correct?
Yes. The numbers that are in the book are for the state plan. The numbers that I gave you this morning are for the state TRIP and SIP.
Okay, hang on. So this Table 9 Medicare Advantage plans, FY 2014, 65114, does not include TRIP or SIP?
Correct.
Okay. So including TRIP or SIP, it's approximately 117,000?
Correct.
So state plus TRIP or SIP is 117?
Correct.
Okay. What was the original amount you thought you were going to get was 120,000?
Well, that's all persons who were eligible. Not everyone who is eligible decided to enroll.
Right. I understand that.
Yeah.
So, but that 120 goal was state plus TRIP or SIP?
Correct.
Okay. So you lost three somewhere along the line.
It's 120-some-thousand, low 120s. I'm not seeing that on my sheet of paper right this second, but I can give you the exact number if you want.
Okay.
Probably, yeah. I don't know.
But someone might be on their spouse's.
That's right, or decide that they can find a cheaper plan outside the state.
Understood.
Especially now.
Yeah, but it. I mean, this is a critical point. We need to know exactly that we're comparing apples to apples,
right,
and what the total numbers are. Okay. So let me ask you this. I find it very interesting that Ms. Bonneville is now taking another job. But when did the department know that the Medicare Advantage folks were going to have to pay two annual deductibles?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
I can find out.
I've asked that three times now in these hearings, so nobody took notes to figure out what I was going to ask?
I can't answer that.
Okay. So, because the statement from the department to this commission was that it was not their intent and they would work and do everything they possibly could to make sure that people did not have to pay their annual deductible twice in the changeover. Now, it appears to me in hindsight that as those statements were being made, you guys knew damn good and well they're going to have to pay it twice. So I would like copies of every document related to that provided to this commission, along with the dates in which they were received and a full timeline of exactly when you knew that, because I don't believe your testimony here was accurate.
Hi, my name is Pam Kogler. I'm one of the I'm administrative services with CMS. I went out and did the MAPD seminars with Janice as well. And my understanding was, with discussions with Janice, who obviously isn't here anymore, that we did not want to charge two deductibles, and we did state that. That was something we looked into. But as we got into it, we found that, you know, this has been a learning process for everybody. As we've gone along, we've learned a lot about Medicare and the rules. And one of the rules that we understood was, after we started this, was you could not, by Medicare, you could not charge the separate deductible. You couldn't, like, not charge the deductible. So we were forced to do, you know, if they had done it under QCHP and then we started again with Medicare February 1, we were not allowed to waive that for them. We had to do it. We wanted to not have it. We wanted to waive it.
And I think what's interesting is when, in the same week or 2 weeks time span, that you guys were testifying here that you didn't want to have to deal with this and you try to get it done and, oh, yeah, we'll work on it in the fall after we get done with these hearings, you're actually telling everybody back home that, oh, you're going to have to pay twice. So somebody knew within the department what the correct answer to the question was, but it was not told to us. Are there co-pays with Medicare Advantage?
Yes, there are.
Okay, and how much are those?
Are you talking about the state plan? For the
yes.
state plan, for the HMOs, the co-pays are $18 for a doctor's visit. Specialist is $25. If you go to the emergency room, it's $65. If you're admitted, it's waived. And
okay, my constituents don't have the HMO plan. So as far as the other one goes, what are
okay,
they?
Okay, for United Healthcare, it's 10% coinsurance for the state plan, 20% coinsurance for trip and sip.
Okay. Which gets back to Senator Ferrix's question, which is the original discussion point about going to a supplement or RFP was for all downstate counties, not just 48. Why did you pick 48?
48 counties are the ones that do not have an HMO option currently. So all
okay.
other counties have an HMO option.
And my constituents that overwhelmingly were forced into a different product are now stuck in the difference in 18, 25, 65 with the 10% coinsurance.
All counties.
I mean, I can just tell you that in Champaign, McLean, uh-huh. Sangamon, you're stuck. And I don't care what you guys say. That's not the experience. I mean, I like the fact you say, oh, everything's fine. Well, it's still not fine. My office receives 10 phone calls a week from angry people. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, we'd call you and sometimes you're able to help and sometimes you're not. But, you know, to sit here and pretend it's fine, it's not fine on behalf of my constituents. And I want to state that conclusively for the record. On the dependent care audit, what page is it? 24, thank you. you start off under state employees, state retirees, TRS retirees. You audited 51,441, of which 45,800 were verified, and then you had about 4,100 that have, you had 228 that were voluntarily terminated, and another 1,317 that were terminated, approved, or other, which I'm not sure what other is. And then you got 4,100 roughly that are just sitting out there. Who are the 4,100 that are sitting out there?
All of the DIVA numbers are very much a work in progress.
Okay.
Every person who is audited is given 6 months to send in their documentation. At the end of that six-month period, if we still have not received anything from them after numerous attempts at contact, they receive a letter saying that their dependent has been terminated. At that point, they have an appeal right to go through. So we are still in the appeal period for the DIVA audit and for the first two groups. And when that is complete and we know what the final numbers are for groups one and two, we will certainly share that with the committee.
So I see you're getting ready to start a new one in July. Have you guys coordinated with the IRS to make sure that the appropriate transcripts are available this time?
We are not going to start the third round in July. We want to make sure that we get benefit choice behind us and that it gets done. We think, you know, in hindsight, doing DIVA and Medicare Advantage at the same time,
it's a little overwhelming.
Was quite a strain on our system, to say the least.
And I don't give a damn about your system, just for the record.
Well, and a strain on all of the individuals who...
There
like,
you go.
You know, a strain on our system causes a strain on the individuals because they're not getting their questions answered as timely as they should. So we want to make sure that the system operates properly because then it serves the members properly.
The IRS wasn't able to give them transcripts that you guys are requiring.
The IRS shutdown happened during that period. You know, we had sort of the perfect storm. When we will be reevaluating when we close out the two
groups.
So
when will the third cohort go out then?
Part of the problem with the transcripts was that the individuals did not understand what it was they were supposed to submit. Before we launched Group 3, which is one of the reasons we have postponed Group 3, We want to do a lessons learned from groups 1 and 2 and improve our communication with the members before we go forward.
So you don't know when group 3 will be?
All we know for sure is we do not want it to interfere with either benefit choice or with the Medicare Advantage re-enrollment in the fall. So we may try to squeeze it in between the two, but again, we don't want to do it at any time that will cause the system to operate in less than an optimal fashion.
It'd be nice. You ought to let us know before you do it, because we're going to get tons of phone calls.
I hope you don't. I hope we have a better communication plan this time.
I want to believe you. I really
do. I
do,
too.
But the previous testimony was we were promised a communication plan, and that didn't happen before MA. So, okay, so of your 228 people who were voluntarily terminated by the member, why were they terminated? What was the rationale? They just were pulled?
A voluntary termination?
Yeah, they just pulled them, no explanation.
I assume they got a letter and realized that their dependent was no longer eligible. Either, you know, we had people who had been divorced for many years who had never...
So has there been any investigation as to whether those were fraudulent to begin with?
There has not.
Is there a plan to be?
We can certainly look into it.
Of the terminated, approved, or other, what's the other?
I would assume that's still pending.
Well, you're still pending is the other column, which is 4,100. So you have 1,317 people that are called terminated, approved, or other.
I'll have to let you know.
Okay. How much did you say, sir, we're behind on the payments to get caught up? $1.5 billion, you said?
Yeah, approximately $1.5 billion.
Okay, $1.5 billion, and at that we're losing $100 million a year in interest. Is that about?
Yes.
Give or take. All right. Will the new MA carriers be subject to the same 7-month payment delay as the HMOs are?
I don't know.
Yes.
So theoretically, as they're picking up a bigger book of business and being delayed 7 months, that ought to give you room to catch up on the HMO people within your appropriation. Maybe not perfectly catch up, but it ought to drop down some.
Right. We'll still be paying. There's only enough cash coming into the program to pay out.
Understood.
So as those people aren't getting paid, the same people are getting paid at the same rate, so it'll still be at 7 months.
Right, but I mean, if how much, what percentage of your claims is now MA? I mean, out of the total pie, what percentage do they have?
It's probably too soon to tell. They're, you know, they've only been in effect for a month.
Okay, ballpark it there. You're, you know. I'm not going to hold you to this one, I promise. 5%, 20%, 10%?
It's about a third. The total program's about $2.6 billion, so about a third of that.
So if you take a third of your appropriation and extend it out 7 months, doesn't that free up cash flow to pay down your existing bills?
Yes, we will steadily be paying those bills down, but... Okay. You're not bringing any more cash in the program. The program,
I understand,
is still
that. Yeah, and I understand that costs go up. But at some level, next time you come up, it should be something less than 7 months behind.
No, it will not.
It will not. Okay. Well, we'll catch up maybe in my office later on that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Tryon.
Yeah, I piqued my curiosity with the $100 million late payment. Part of the late payment act. So that's a 12% interest, correct? Is that what we're paying?
There's two. One part of it's prompt pay, and the other part's timely pay.
Okay.
Some of it's at 12%. The other part's at 9%.
9 or 12. So what percentage does that $100 million make up of all the of the costs of the programs that are being managed?
The total program is just over $2.6 billion, and that includes that $100
million. So 5% or 4% of the costs or whatever, 3%
yep.
of the costs are due to interest that if we paid on time, we wouldn't have.
Correct.
Right. What kind of complaints do you get from employees? I've had interesting dilemmas with hospitals and providers. My daughter broke her ankle in Missouri, and we had to go to the hospital there, and they don't really care too much about the General Assembly's employee program there. So, you know, after about 9 months, they tell you you have to pay. And if you don't, you go to collections. So I had to write a check for $3,500 and get paid back. So, I mean, I assume that's not just happening to me. It's happening to everyone, correct? So is there any way you track that on how many of our employees get turned over to collection? How many, I mean, is there some kind of way that they get processed if they're going to collection, at some kind of appeal they can make to get it expedited? I mean, we're putting our employees' credit at risk. Just so you know, not only in there, my telephone got shut off 3 times in my legislative office, and my copy machine got repossessed. And when I went to refinance a piece of property, the copy machine was on my credit report. I wasn't particularly happy about that either, since that was a state office. But do you get complaints like this from employees, or they just...
Yes.
Do we know of any other state in the same position that, I mean, you surely go to conferences around the country or keep in touch with other states where they're this far behind on their health care? I mean, you're talking, what, 14 months?
Yeah, it depends on the plan.
That's insane. That is, I can't really get my arms around that. I, if you did that in a private sector, the company CEO would probably be in jail. Yeah, we've even done that and it didn't help. But you know, I mean, it's just insane that that we would pay, we collect this money from our employees, and some of these, I would assume the eye care program, that's all employee money, isn't it? I mean, the state isn't subsidizing that, are they? Do we subsidize that?
Yeah.
Don't you come up with the actuarial eye care?
We pay for vision.
All right, but we charge our employees for it, right? Okay, so that is then again subsidized with general fund dollars, or is that money that $2 that's going into the vision plan per month per employee, is that funding the entire vision plan, or is there more money being subsidized on that?
There would be more money subsidizing that, whether it's GRF, other state funds, federal funds.
Marsh Armstrong, Central Management Services. Actually, we don't charge a premium to the employee. The vision program costs $2. The revenues for our overall group insurance is a combination of GRF, road fund, all other state payrolls, member and retiree contributions. So that all rolls into the revenue. And then we have special dental premium rates and other rates that go with your choice. But vision and mental health are embedded in those rates, and the member doesn't actually pay a premium out of their pocket for that.
Okay. So, this is another, well, this will be a question for the eye people when they come up, because I think there's other interesting things happening to the eye program. We're finding eye doctors not taking it, you know, and that are supposed to be taking it and so forth. So, but anyway, so we're 14 months behind. And it's a $3.6 billion program. What kind of
$2.6 billion
program? So what's it take to get it back on track, you think?
I mean, we're $1.5 billion behind in bills, so it'd be a $1.5 billion appropriation, and the cash from the comptroller to back up the appropriation.
So what kind of, If we got that cycle down to, let's say, 90 days or even 100 days, would there be penalties then that we would have to pay? What under the Prompt Payment Act and your Quick Pay Law, the difference between 9% and 12%, what's the dates on that? I mean, so if you pay in 90 days, you're okay? Does it have to be
the clock start?
Yeah.
They're different for each of them, and
One of them is 60 days, one of them is 90 days, I forget which is which, from the date of a received correct bill.
So a correct bill is one where you get the explanation of benefits and there's no objection from the employer or an employee?
A clean bill is when our insurance company mm-hmm. provides it to us. And there is some adjustments that happen, so it's not final as far as subrogation, collecting from a secondary insurance. It's final as far as, yes, these are the charges, and this service was rendered.
Okay.
And I've been corrected. Timely pay is 30 days.
30 days? Okay. Thank you.
Representative Trotter.
Now that's okay. I used to serve in the House. I guess I can wear that title as well. And you're talking about your claims hold. You gave us a percentage of one that we owe $1.5 billion that we are in back payments. What does that represent in real numbers? I mean, how many vendors do we owe, and where are they? Who are they?
Cigna vendor currently, you know, at any point in time our backlog will change, but it hovers around 1.5 in general. The last report was $1.453 billion. Of that amount, about $405 million is owed to Cigna, about $44 million to Delta, our dental provider, and the balance for HMO ASC fees, about $536 million. Medco, our pharmacy provider, about $175. And then we've also got HealthLink and Coventry, which are our self-insured OAP providers, and that totals almost $300 million.
Do those estimates change at all if, in fact, we do extend the income tax? Have you looked at revenues coming from that direction?
If we have extra revenues into the program, for about every $100 million that we get in extra revenues, it buys down 2 weeks of the hold. We try to keep our providers constant. So to your previous question, Senator Rose, we would keep our HMOs constant, including Medicare Advantage, so they would all be held at 7 months.
Okay. And if I can just now flip, thank you very much. The answer on your Medicare Advantage, you talked about your successes in having these seminars across the state. What have you heard are the problems with it now, even after the discussions you've had?
The main problem is that doctors who are not a part of the United Healthcare network don't fully understand the billing procedures, and some of the members as well, that you don't have to go to a doctor that's part of the United Healthcare network. They just have to bill through that. And a lot of what our people are doing on a day-to-day basis now is working with individual doctors' offices and individual members to get their billing straightened out. And that's the main issue that we're getting right now, is just getting everyone to understand how the program works. And there's still a lot of people whose doctors are saying, well, I'm not a part of that network, so I can't take this. As we work through that.
But they're starting to get it.
We're hopeful that mm-hmm. eventually they'll all get it.
Okay. And what is the timeline you're looking at? Where does it, if they don't get it soon enough, that it becomes a major problem for the efficacy of this program?
I'm sorry, could you repeat yourself?
If they don't get it, I mean, so wouldn't you, in your frame of mind, right, believe that it becomes a problem in the actual rolling out this program?
Well, I mean, eventually they're going to have to get it. We're going to have to work with them all until everyone understands how it works.
Okay, but you haven't set a deadline. There's no magical date that they have to get it before it becomes that bomb in the room.
We have re-enrollment in the fall, mm-hmm. and if people are not happy with the choice they've chosen, they can make another choice.
Okay. Thank you.
Co-Chair Tracy.
Thank you. For clarification, and I do apologize if this has already been answered, but I wanted to make sure that the things I had in my mind were clarified or specifically answered. You'd mentioned in prior testimony, I believe it was Acting Director McNeil, that your retiree benefit contributions are expected to go up next year. Do we know how much?
It's from 1% of your annuity to 2% of your annuity.
Do we have a figure on the prompt payment interest? You mentioned it was, or testified that it was $100 million this year. Do we know how much it was last year, the prior fiscal year, 2013?
In fiscal year 13, our prompt pay interest was $35,533,000, and our timely pay interest was $56,512,000.
So actually it was less for 2013 than it is now for 2014.
Yeah, it's for 13, it looks like it's going to come in right around $90 million.
Okay. So, you know, I'm wondering, when I hear that we're making progress, but yet the timely payments are actually less for 2014.
Now, that was the fiscal year 13 number, and our backlog of bills at the close of fiscal 13 was $1.2 billion.
Right, so we're not really gaining. We're actually increasing our amount of unpaid bills.
Right, we're falling behind. We were under-appropriated this year.
Okay, now going to the dependent verification audit, as I recall, that was kind of a fiasco because we were using an Indiana company and people thought there was scams and consumer concerns about why they were being asked for this type of information. Do we know how much we paid that Indiana company?
The cost under the contract is $3.77 per dependent audited. So the number for the entire audit, I don't have it broken out between what we've already done and what we still have to do, but the cost of the entire audit will be $690,162. To date, we have, with voluntary, as I said, the involuntary terminations are still a work in progress because of appeal rights and time frames that have not expired. But in voluntary termination so far, we've saved about $1.5 million. So we're about $1 million to the good so far.
Now, there were a number of people, my figure shows 4,000, that may have actually, well, there was a number of people in nursing homes that didn't have the access or the ability to do the verification. Is there a process in play as to how they will be verified, or what have their dependents been terminated, or how are we working towards that end?
Well, one of the things we did was we waived everyone over 85 years of age. They were not required to send in documentation. The problem that occurred with nursing homes is a lot of those people have powers of attorney for other people to act on their behalf. Those powers of attorney in many cases are held by the nursing homes, and they were not acting on the mail, or they were going to some relative who's in a different state who was not acting on the mail. But if we have any reason to believe that anyone is in a nursing home, each of those individuals is followed up individually to the best of our ability.
Okay. And going to this Indiana company, did we find an Illinois company that could do the Illinois or the independent or the dependent verification audit?
It's are my we still understanding using the one? That it was a competitive procurement and they were the winner.
So are we still using the Indiana company?
Yes.
And then also, in part of the testimony, it was that there was $37 million paid of the existing backlog, and I'm assuming that was for 2013, but that there was a new backlog. Is that the $1.5 billion that we testified to?
No, that was in reference to workers' comp.
Okay. So we have a new backlog in workman's comp. We've got, because we were, right. But
the workers' comp backlog was totally paid down. However, since that time, especially since the first of the year, the comptroller has been very stingy with cash. And so we are building a new backlog. It's not as big as the old backlog. And we hope, we have an agreement with the comptroller on cash that should keep us current when the fiscal year ends. We hope to have the new backlog gone.
Is there a figure to associate with that new backlog?
I think it's currently about $12
million.
$12 million? It fluctuates. We get some cash in, we pay down, we build up a new backlog, but it's the new backlog's been hovering around that amount, and we're trying to reach an agreement with the comptroller to get it gone by the end of the fiscal year.
Okay. For the group insurance savings estimates, is it correct that they are $300 million in 2014? Is that what we're saying? And that you anticipate it's going to be $435 in fiscal year 2015?
Correct.
Okay, and so is that what we would quantify as the AFSCME cost savings that we've had from collective bargaining, from the new group insurance, this whole overall program?
Yes, the group insurance savings were part of the contractual agreement.
Okay, and then as far as the third party vendor, can you explain how this program works for the vendor's assistance program? Remember, we were going to, now I recall, the independent or a third party vendor payment program. Have we had success with that? Did that actually come to fruition, that there was a third party independent vendor system?
There is a vendor payment program in place for state vendors. It does not currently cover medical bills. We are working currently to put a new program in place that will specifically cover medical bills.
Okay, so it never was implemented then?
We have one now for HMO.
No. HMO. For HMO. Oh, look who's here. A vendor payment program person.
Good morning, Chima Enya, CMS. I help coordinate the vendor payment program for the state of Illinois. Currently, the vendor payment program was created to cover all things that are prompt payment eligible. So a portion of what is covered are the ASC fees that we get through the health insurance revolving.
Can you explain ASC
the
fees?
Administrative services charge. Mm-hmm. Administrative services charge. So only thing that's covered as of right now is the administrative services charge regarding claims are not part of the program at this point.
The administrative service charge for HMOs includes a capitated medical payment, so we are actually covering medical payments for HMOs. The timely payment portion is like for example through Cigna. Cigna revolves the money and pays providers directly, so we don't have a direct relationship with those providers. So that is still a work in progress for the vendor payment program. Any voucher that goes through the controller's office that we can work with the vendors, and if it's appropriated and subject to prompt payment, right now those are the programs that are eligible.
But okay. We are looking at some innovative ways to see how we can incorporate the claims portion, which is timely payment.
So if I'm understanding correctly, this program hasn't been successful whatsoever?
The program has been very successful. We've had various testimonies from individuals, whether it be commodities and other areas of service providers that have taken advantage of the program. Currently, there's about $325 million that's gone through the vendor payment program. This is money that's going on the street to vendors to help keep their doors open and help them mitigate the backlog of bills. So, but they're not medical.
What are they then?
For example, the HMO payments, when we pay the HMOs more quickly, when they are able to use this money, they can pay their providers more quickly. So their networks, anybody that can get the money through the vendor payment program, their providers are actually getting paid more timely. The ones that are subject to the 9%, the timely pay, they're still getting the interest based on the actual claims payment. So it's successful for the capitated programs, but we haven't been able to implement it for the non-capitated programs.
Okay. Is there a contracted vendor for the program, a specific vendor that we're using?
Right now, we don't have a contract with any of the qualified purchasers. We have 4 qualified purchasers at the moment, Vendor Assistance Program, Capital Access Program Trust, a company called PayPlant, and another company called MuniPayMe. And those are the 4 entities that purchase receivables through the program.
Is there a specific cost savings that we can associate then with the third-party vendor system?
The system in and of itself is a zero balance system. The only cost savings really is to the vendors who do not have to go through third-party, you know, factoring companies, which take dollar amounts off of their receivables. We have been able to. It's basically just taking the burden off of the vendors. And the state still has the same obligation to pay that it would have in any other situation. And so it's a zero sum for the state. The vendors get 100% of their receivables, and the vendors also do not have to wait for this, you know, for the ultimate state payment.
Then on the interest, is it the who keeps the interest then that would normally be paid through the prompt payment? Is it the vendor?
No, the vendor forgoes the interest.
Right. They forego. So where does the interest go?
To the third party investor.
Okay, so do they get the exact 9%, and that's why you're saying it's a zero?
Well, they don't get the exact 9% because it doesn't apply to timely payment at this time. The vendor payment program, as it exists right now, only applies to prompt payments. So they would get the prompt payment associated. So for the ASC fees, they would get the 12%.
Okay, could we
annualized.
Go through? You said there's three or four.
There are 4.
Who are they?
Vendor Assistance Program, Capital Access Program Trust, PayPlant, and MuniPayMe is the 4.
Do we get a report on that?
We provide reports to, each of the 4 qualified purchasers provide reports to CMS and the Comptroller's Office, and we can provide those monthly reports.
Okay, we would appreciate that. Thank you.
Now we have a couple of follow-up questions. First, Senator Rose.
Thank you. Going back to the dependent care audit concept, something that Representative Tracy mentioned and I thought was, of these folks that might be in nursing homes, the 4,000, what is the appeal rate if they're kicked off?
Everyone has a 30-day immediate appeal right.
Okay, to who? To you or to where? Court?
Yes.
Okay. Now, if they didn't respond, though, is that denied if they were in a nursing home?
If we knew they were in a nursing home, then we would work with that nursing home to make sure we got the documentation we needed. I don't think anyone who we knew was in a nursing home. Now, keep in mind, there's a small percentage of people who are in nursing homes because most of them, their kids are older than age 26. You know, they may have a spouse.
I'm more worried about the POA that's out of state. So you're mailing the notice to the power of attorney in California and they never respond. Before you kick little lady off of her health insurance plan, is somebody making sure that that's really... I mean, is it different between a current employee who's living in Illinois than a POA from California? And actually, oddly enough, we're dealing with this in a different situation with the Illinois Commerce Commission where a trustee in California did not get notice of a condemnation proceeding in Illinois, and yet the farmer's still sitting out there farming the ground.
Every case where we had a power of attorney was personally reviewed. You know, yeah. Our goal was not to kick off people just because they didn't send in a piece of paper. Our goal was to follow up on every case and make sure that we had the right answer.
Okay. So if there's an out-of-state POA, someone's
that would have been followed up personally, and we would have found out where the person was located, talked to the facility, did whatever we needed to do.
On Representative Tryon's point, which I thought was a good one about people who are injured out of state and the doctors aren't necessarily willing to do this little dance, is there some kind of a downloadable form that you can give to the insureds that they can send to their doctors that would say, yes, this is an Illinois claim, yes, it will eventually be paid? Or are these people just supposed to fend for themselves? I mean, I would think that if we had a letter from the state of Illinois that said you could send to the credit agency, for example, and say, stop your enforcement, here's the state of Illinois' estoppel letter. Is there anything like that?
Well, they have insurance cards.
Yeah, but I mean, the guy who's calling you at 6 o'clock in the morning and 8 o'clock at night, hounding you because you haven't paid your medical bill, doesn't care about that.
I'm Brett Gerger with Program Services. I'm a Program Services Manager. We have our hotlines. We receive those calls every day. We work directly with the providers to try to not to get them to send to the collection. We even have the members work out payment plans. We have the vendors do personal outreach calls. We do personal outreach calls. And we make every effort for those vendors not to take them to collections or beyond.
Okay. Do you issue an estoppel letter that says the claim will be paid?
We sure do. We will send them a letter, and it's a case-by-case basis, and we indicate what our claim hold is and when the payment will be made.
Okay. And then I think Representative Tracy actually made my point better than I did earlier about the if you're holding your claims, all claims is 7 months, and you've got a new vendor coming in with a third of the pool, and they're going to be held at 7 months, that's exactly how you absorbed the hit. Because if your budget would underfunded your claims amount this year, then obviously it would have to go out beyond 7 months, but you've added a new vendor in the form of Medicare Advantage who's now absorbing that hit. Because they're going to go from 0 to 7 months as claims accrue, and that's the only way you're able to help hold everybody else at a steady rate of 7 months in the existing pool. Is that a fair statement?
As the Medicare Advantage, a new vendor's claims grow, so no payments will be made to them until
they
reach that point.
Right.
The other ones who are at 7 months, they'll keep being paid down.
The backlog of bills is not getting better.
No, it'll stay even.
But it actually grows. I mean, if you're at 1.2 last year and you're going to be at 1.5 this year?
I'm sorry, I misspoke. 1.2 was at the end of fiscal 12.
Okay.
So over the last two fiscal years, we've been under-appropriated about $150 million each year. So that's why it's grown to 1.5.
So we're Q4 now in fiscal 14. What's your best guess to where you're going to end? How far are you behind?
$1.5 billion.
So you went from 1.2 to 1.5. So there's a $300 million difference there that's basically been absorbed by the new MA provider. And that's the only way you can do it in a static environment. Which, by the way, is my entire theory on why this whole MA thing showed up anyway, because you guys knew you couldn't pay the bills, and so you created a new vendor to absorb 7 months' worth of claims that you didn't have to pay until 7 months out. So that's exactly what this is about from day one. By the way, if I seem frustrated, I am, and it means absolutely no disrespect to anyone on the panel here. You all seem very nice. But to be brutally honest, I've sat through CMS panel after CMS panel for 3 years now, and every year we get made promises, and every year we have a better communication plan, and every year it doesn't work. So with all due respect to you there, I'll believe it when I see it.
Senator Severson.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, there we go. On the back on the vendor payment issue, so what will happen is basically a vendor who
can't carry back that money because they're not a large vendor,
right,
and they need to get paid, then what we do is the goal of this payday loan issue is then we're going to, a vendor will pay them and then absorb that note, and then the state will pay them. Does that vendor get their full payment, or do they have to negotiate a discount off of their charge?
The vendor gets 100% of the actual amount of the bill.
So they'll get 100%.
The third party gets the interest. That's how they make money on it.
Okay.
They're people who can afford the float better, and that's
okay.
how they make
money. So they'll get fully paid.
Yes.
So, it's a great business mm-hmm. to get 9%, but then you have to hope that the state will actually pay it. But actually, we could probably use our pension money to pay that, because we could, getting 9% interest, we could probably do a little better. just throw it out as an idea.
You can use your pension money if you want.
Well, I'll take my deferred comp I'll put in there. I'd take 9% all day long.
And this is Chima, Anya. Just a lot of times in the vendor payment program, we don't actually see the 9 or 12%. We see, 3 to 4% for prompt payment eligible vouchers after that 90 days. So very rarely do they realize the full annualized 12% on the prompt payment piece of it.
Right, but it's almost a point a month. It's 3/4 a point a month.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, same yep. difference. Yeah, I understand. I'd still be happy to take that. Now, with the Advantage plan, a lot of that's paid for by, is that federal money that comes through? And is that comes through and passed through? And so is that wouldn't be, does that get held up as part of this?
Marcia?
The federal funding goes directly to the vendors. It doesn't pass through central management services.
Okay, so under the Advantage plan, so that keeps, that protects the vendors from having the state not pay their bills then, so they're getting 80% of that.
In some amount, and also when we went out for bid, we informed the vendors that we would be looking at a 7 to 9 month payment delay, so the vendors were aware of that when they bid on the product.
Like the Uniteds and those?
Right.
Well, sure, if we're going to give them 9%, they probably hope you don't pay your bills. So if that's the case, then that backlog of bills that we have is really a larger portion because it's not counting those. It's the backlog is really being absorbed by everybody other than the Advantage plans. Then, if that 80% of the Advantage plans are being paid for by the feds, that means then more of that backlog is being bore by the non-Advantage individuals. Right?
The backlog is actually shifting from Quality Care and some of our other products. So it's really a shift in backlog, where we would have projected out a backlog for Quality Care and the other HMO and OAP products. They're coming out of this population. They're moving to a backlog in Medicare Advantage. So we have to keep about the same dollar amount, and we strive to keep our vendors consistent. But what we're actually seeing is a lesser backlog in Quality Care and a bigger backlog in Managed Care, because so many of our population migrated out of Quality Care.
And last question, if we agree to pay a vendor that money, and then we agreed also to pay them interest on that money, wouldn't it be easy enough for those vendors then to credit that onto that employee's EOB? So in essence, we've promised to pay the vendor, then what, can't that vendor then credit that onto that employee's EOB, so then they can get, when they get their EOB, it'll show that state's portion's been credited, and then the employee can pay the balance of it instead of waiting for a year to get an EOB that shows it's been paid?
Do they have to wait until they get the EOB?
Yeah. The way the EOBs work is they're not generated until payment is made, so the EOB wouldn't reflect that. But
if we made a promise to pay them and a promise to pay them interest, then from that standpoint, why couldn't they just... they're going to get the money, then why wouldn't they, from an employee standpoint, it'd be cleaner so they could get an EOB that would show this is what their credit would be.
That would go to the vendors. The vendors have problems with our backlog in their systems, with how EOBs are issued, and they all do something different, but our backlog causes them great distress with their EOBs because the claim is filed and it's not paid for close to a year.
Right. Now, does each vendor then have to apply for that interest, or does that get passed through the carrier to the vendor?
It's automatic. When we actually release the check for that service and it goes to the provider, the vendor will also calculate the interest payment based on, you know, the difference between the date of service and how long it took us to actually cut the check. So that way we know exactly what it is when that check is cut.
I guess that's my question. If the vendor knows they're going to get that money, plus they're going to get the interest, why can't they, from the employee standpoint, do that accounting on their EOB so the employee knows this is what the state's paid, this is what I have to pay, and from the employee standpoint, that their account then is clean, because now it's just an issue between when the payment and the interest goes to the carrier. So it would just be much easier for employees to have that clean.
My understanding, the interest isn't on the OMB. The interest is a separate check, just to clarify that. But my understanding is it's vendor programming. Their book of business, if they're processing a lot of checks, it's typically released when it's paid, and they actually process it and hold it until we say they can release it. So I think it varies among the vendors, but the primary reason I've heard is because of programming at the vendor level.
It would be nice, but it's also somewhat surprised to hear that that we were under-appropriated last year, because we were promised that the budget was fully balanced and paid last year, so I'm not sure what happened with that. Oops.
Okay, we do have a couple of things we need to vote on here today. We're going to move on to them. I want to thank CMS for coming forward. I know that there are some members of the commission who have additional questions, but I think that's it for right now. We're going to move on our agenda to the couple of items that we need to vote on today: renewed and amended contracts for fiscal year 2015. We have iMed Vision Care, Nick Senshi. Is Nick able to come forward? And then we'll bring up WageWorks next.
Okay. I don't think your microphone is on yet.
There should be a green light that comes on when you...
Okay, Natalie Mason, counsel for iMed Vision Care.
Nick Sensi, senior account manager, iMed.
Any report? Any questions from commission members?
I guess I'll go.
Co-chair Tracy.
Is there an investigation by the Illinois Attorney General's office or any other Attorney General's office from any other state into iMed right now?
No.
What has the percentage utilization of your services been over the past 3 years?
It's been on, I can actually give you the average for the past 3 years. It's been 28% for eye exam, 21% for materials.
And do you feel employees have a sufficient knowledge of the vision benefits?
I do, yes.
How has the claims hold issue affected your responsibilities under the contract?
We continue to pay our providers in a timely manner.
Which is what?
Which is what our contract, we have contracts with our network providers and we pay pursuant to those terms. We don't let delays in payment cause us to delay payment to the providers.
So you're saying that they're paid within 30 days or whatever the
contract says.
Okay. What changes exist in your renewed contract for fiscal year 2015?
There are a couple of changes to the state plan. We'll be making an increase in the copay for the eye exam to $25. We will also be making a change in the frequency allowance from 24 months to 12 months for the, pardon me, I'm getting the information here, we'll be going from a 12-12-24 plan to a 12-12-12, so frame allowance now is at every 12 months.
Thank you.
Hey, any further questions? See no further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can we next have WageWorks, Tanya Brennan?
Good morning. Tanya Brennan, the Senior Account Manager for WageWorks in the state of Illinois.
Okay, and I'll ask you, if I may.
Yeah, Coach Tracy.
If I may ask the same questions that we asked prior to IMED, are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General's Office or any other state Attorney General's Office?
No, we're not.
And what changes exist in your renewed contract for commuter savings for fiscal year 2015?
The commuter contract was actually renewed already. It was renewed under the one-year term. We're currently out for RFP on the FSA, which is the health and dependent care accounts. What we're offering new for the new year is the ability to have your participants carry over the $500 instead of the use it or lose it program that was currently in place.
And in regards to the MCAP, how does the prepayment system work?
The prepayment system, I'm sorry?
In regards to MCAP?
The prepayment system is the state prefunds the account, and as participants take payroll deductions in, that's how they're paid out.
And with the money provided in, to a participant at the beginning of the year instead of during the year, how is the money provided and how is it recouped if the participant leaves employment before the monthly contributions are made?
We don't have anything in place if they leave employment. And participants are giving a WageWorks debit card that they're able to use. Because the amount is their election amount is pre-funded on their card, there is nothing in place with WageWorks. I'm not sure with the CMS office if they have anything in place to recoup funds if a participant spends the annual election amount up front.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Senator Rose.
Actually, follow up on that. CMS, what does happen if somebody leaves? So if I get this straight, and if you put $1,200 on your MCAP, on July 1st, the state of Illinois puts $1,200 into their bank account under your name. And then you're supposed to put $100 a month out of your paycheck into that over the course of the year. If you spend the whole $1,200 on braces in the first quarter and leave in the second quarter, how does the state get their $900 back?
Pam Kogler, I'm also the manager of flexible spending. You don't get your money back. It's the whole use it or lose it, and it works both ways. If you put your money in and you don't use it, you forfeit it at the end of the year. It works the same way on the other side. It's against IRS rules for us to go and get that money if you don't pay it because you terminate employment.
So how much at the end of the year, how much do you get, how much is lapsed permanently versus walked away or people who leave early? Is that square or is it we in the hole?
We always come out ahead with forfeitures.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, the plan pretty much pays for itself.
Okay. Then back to you guys, and this is a personal note. It'd be really helpful on that little web form if you had more than one vendor at a time. Just think about that.
The web form? Okay. Thank you. We are looking to update the Easy Mobile app as well with adding additional vendors. We've heard that from several of our contractors.
Okay, seeing no further questions of the commission, do we have a motion on these contracts? Co-Chair Tracy?
Yes, pursuant to 5 ILCS 375/5, I make a motion to recommend approval of the proposed one-year extension of the following contracts for fiscal year 2015 for IMED and WageWorks.
Thank you. Seconded by Senator Trotter. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Burke?
Yes.
Senator Frerichs?
Yes.
Senator Kaler?
Yes.
Senator Murphy? Representative Nekritz?
Yes.
Representative Poe? Representative Riley? Senator Rose?
Yes.
Senator Severson?
Yes.
Representative Tracy?
Yes.
Senator Trotter?
Aye.
Representative Tryon?
Yes.
Nine.
With 9 members voting in favor, the motion passes. And Representative Riley was aye as well. 10 members voting in favor. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll move back on the agenda to ongoing health care contracts for fiscal year 2015, HMOs. Can we first start with Blue Cross Blue Shield, HMO Illinois Blue Advantage?
Hi, I'm Joanne Wetzel, Blue Cross Blue Shield.
I'm Sandra Gonzalez, account executive.
Okay. Are there any questions? Coach R. Tracy.
Could you tell me what the length of the current claims hold for preferred providers and non-preferred provider? No. Okay, I apologize.
Okay. Yeah, no claim hold.
Okay. Do you have any pending regulatory issues with the Division of Insurance?
No.
Are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General or any other state attorney general's office?
No.
How has the claims hold issue affected your responsibilities under your contract?
It has not at this time.
Based on your contract, when are you supposed to be paid?
Right now, we're running anywhere from 7 to 9 months behind.
So but on, under the contract, what is the...
We've offered an extended grace, so there's a four-month pay period.
But in the contract, what is the language required? Is that a...
That is part of the contract. We allow for 4 months
for
payment.
Mm-hmm. 4 months, but you've done a grace period.
Well, that includes that. So, in other words, the state is not considered to be late until a four-month time frame has passed.
Do you have any comments regarding the vendor assistance program, and have you made use of it?
We have not made use of it yet. It is something that we consider as time continues to progress, but we are not participating today.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next up, Health Alliance.
Good morning. My name is Sinead Rice Madigan.
Hi, Lori Cowdrey Benso.
Okay. Any questions? Co-Chair Tracy.
Do you have any regulatory issues pending with the Division of Insurance?
No, we do not.
Are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General's Office or any other state's Attorney General's Office?
No, we are not.
How has the claims hold issue affected your responsibilities under your contract?
We've been able to timely pay our providers.
Based on your contract, when are you supposed to be paid?
The 25th of the month, each month.
Each month. Do you have any comments regarding the vendor's assistance program?
We have made utilization of the program. We've sold about six payments, so it's enabled us to continue to timely pay our providers and not have to hold payments and then pay the provider's interest.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Tryon.
I'm just curious, what kind of interest do your providers charge you?
Well, it's by statute, too, 9%.
So you have to pass along the money to the provider?
We would, yeah, if we withhold.
I did not know that.
If we delay, I should say.
So when was the last time the state paid you in a timely manner on the 25th?
Probably about 6 or 7 years ago.
So for 7 years, we've been further pushing your payment back.
It used to be about four, and now it's between about seven, sometimes 7 to 9 months.
So when were we ever at 30 days?
A long time ago.
How long ago?
I don't remember. Probably.
You were probably in high school, right?
Yeah, I think I was in high school. You're right.
Great.
Go with that. I like that.
All right. So did you know? What, 10 years, 15 years?
I would say, well, no, it's probably not been 10. It's probably been about 8 years ago, I would say.
When you were being paid?
When we were being paid timely, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? Seeing none, thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Next up, Coventry.
Okay.
Please introduce yourselves.
Frank D'Antonio, Market President for Aetna.
Tricia Menendez, Director of Strategic Accounts.
Okay. Representative Tracy.
Do you have any pending regulatory issues with the Division of Insurance?
No.
Are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General's Office or any other state's Attorney General's Office?
No.
How has the claims hold issue affected your responsibilities under the contract?
It hasn't. We've been able to meet our payments to our providers.
Based on your contract, when are you supposed to be paid?
Typically the 25th of the month.
Do you have any comments regarding the vendor's assistance program, and have you made use of it?
We have made use of it, and actually, overall, it's worked. It helped us. It helps us with our timely filing requirements and payments to the providers.
And following up on Representative Tryon's previous questions, do you recall when you were paid timely by the state?
So we've been
under your contract.
Yeah, so we've been lucky to have the state contract for the state of Illinois employees for over 30 years, and I would say probably 2003, 2004.
Thank you.
That's a guess, though.
Thank you.
Okay, further questions? Oh, thank you very much. Next, we'll move on to the open access plans. Coventry? Sorry about that. I might have dismissed you a little early.
Frank D'Antonio, Market President.
Yes, welcome back.
Tricia Menendez, Director of Strategic Accounts.
Okay, any questions of the committee regarding the OAPs?
Well, here we go again.
Yes.
Do you have any pending regulatory issues with the Division of Insurance?
Nope.
Are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General's Office or any other state Attorney General's Office?
Nope.
How has the claims hold issue affected your responsibilities under your contract?
Same answer. We've been able to make our payments, but I would say on the OAP plan, it's a little bit more tricky because state's funds are coming from the state directly as opposed to through premium.
Based on your contract, when were you to be paid under that contract provision?
Should be the 25th as well.
Do you have any comments regarding the vendor assistance program, and are you currently making use of it?
Not on the OAP side, so I have no comments on that.
Okay. Seeing no questions, I feel comfortable saying thank you very much. You can go back to your seats. The second OAP plan, HealthLink.
Hello, I'm Mark Hagley, in charge of sales for HealthLink.
Susan Laney, account manager for HealthLink.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Frazier is our question of the day.
Do you have any pending regulatory issues with the Division of Insurance?
We do not.
Are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General's Office or any other state Attorney General's Office?
We are not.
Have you received any feedback from Medicare Advantage participants on difficulties in obtaining prescriptions, keeping and consulting with consumers' doctors, or obtaining services from their preferred medical facilities?
We have received some customer service calls from members that moved to the Medicare Advantage program and their concerns about the different plans. We send them back to CMS to understand the plan that they have in hand.
Do you have a number?
I'm sorry, I do not, but I can get that for you.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And if you have received any feedback on these issues, how are you addressing them to ensure that individuals can keep their current doctors and have quality care?
Well, I'm very careful in the information that I provide because it's a United Healthcare plan, so it's not the HealthLink plan. I outline that they can go to any provider that they choose to go to, and that's still an option for them. But for additional information, I send them back to CMS.
Can you tell me, based on your contract, when are you supposed to be paid?
On the 25th of every month.
And are you using the vendor assistance program?
We are not.
Thank you.
Okay, further questions, the commission? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will move on to Medicare Advantage Plans, HMO PPO. First up, United Healthcare PPO.
Mm-hmm. Good morning. Gail Adams, I'm president of Group Retiree Services, and I have the client management and sales teams.
Good morning, Dee Dee Raybuck, Strategic Account Executive.
Good morning, Amanda Van Dalen. I oversee the customer service team.
Okay. Questions? Representative Tracy.
Do you have any pending regulatory issues with the Division of Insurance?
No.
And are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General's Office or any other state Attorney General's Office?
No.
Have you received any feedback from Medicare Advantage participants on difficulties in obtaining their prescriptions, keeping and consulting with their doctors, or obtaining services from their preferred medical facilities?
Yes, we have had some feedback.
Do you have a number?
Do I talk to the number of calls? Talk to the number of calls.
Yeah, sure. I have, overall, I've got feedback on issues or difficulty related to the plan, but it's an all-encompassing number. So between February and March, we took 67,000 calls, and of them, 2% were related to some type of complaint or confusion regarding the plan.
And what was your plan in addressing them to ensure that the individuals can keep their current doctors and have their quality of care?
Certainly. We have a number of processes that we leveraged. So we completed some training up front in advance of implementation. So in December, we trained the call center staff to leverage specific processes in the event that a member would call regarding the participation status of their provider. It really begins with education and just informing them that they can see any provider willing to bill Medicare. We do also leverage an outreach process where we can call the provider to have that discussion with them in order to help with the transition to the plan.
Did you find that you had doctors that were denying the Medicare coverage, that didn't want to take the system or the plan?
No, it was more around provider confusion. So, like indicated earlier, you know, we had proactive outreach. We called 20,000 providers ahead of the contract effective date of 2/1. We contracted all the primary facilities. We also contracted and had contracts with a number of existing providers. So it was a massive proactive outreach program to all the providers, not only in Illinois, but in those surrounding states. We did a geo match where we took the zip codes and the utilization of the members and paired it with those providers, and we focused on those providers and or facilities that were heavily utilized by your membership.
Is it your opinion then that the learning curve has been absorbed and that we've weathered the storm and that most of your consumers are receiving their preferred doctor and the quality of care that they would like to have?
Yes.
Okay. Additional questions, Senator Rose.
How many lives did you get in total? Because our chart was wrong.
109,000.
109. So your 67,000 calls. How many of them were unique individuals versus repeats? Do you have any idea?
I'm sorry, I don't have that, but I can get it.
That's okay. Yeah, that's all right. Do you know when the state of Illinois was told that people would be charged twice for their deductibles this year?
No, I do not.
Would you guys have mentioned that to them at any point in time?
I believe there was discussion early on in the RFP process and the contract negotiation process regarding the deductible.
And when would that have approximately been?
Do you remember the date?
Maybe last summer?
Yeah, probably last summer, early fall.
Last summer, early fall.
Yeah. All right. All right. Thank you.
See no further questions. Thank you. Oh, one more. Representative Tryon.
Would you have any communication to that effect? Anything where you communicated formally with CMS about how the potential for two deductibles would be applied?
No one from this team that was sitting here was involved in those contract negotiations directly, so I don't believe that that communication exists.
So this was...
in the written.
Well, it would have to exist in a contract someplace then.
The plan design exists in the contract. So the plan design that was negotiated with the deductible and it is in the contract. The current plan design is in the contract.
Interesting. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no further questions, thank you very much for your time. Next up, Aetna HMO.
Good morning. Ryan Boise, Executive Director for Aetna.
Nancy Urell, Account Exec for Aetna.
Okay. Representative Tracy?
Do you have any pending regulatory issues with the Division of Insurance?
No.
Are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General's Office or any other state Attorney General's Office?
No.
Have you received any feedback from Medicare Advantage participants on difficulties obtaining prescriptions, keeping or consulting their doctors, or obtaining services for their preferred medical facilities?
We have had some, yes.
Do you have a quantity for us?
We had 12 grievances, which are complaints. Access was one of those calls.
Can you give us an idea of what the remaining 11 were?
They would have been about benefits or services, questions about marketing.
And did you address those issues from those individuals?
We did.
In your opinion, then, are your participants receiving the quality of care and being able to be seen by their current doctors?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Senator Rose.
Thank you. You are the company formerly known as Coventry?
Yes, sir.
Okay. How many Coventry HMO people did you have prior to Medicare Advantage?
I don't have those numbers in front of me.
Did you lose or gain members in the switch?
We actually lost.
And how many did you lose?
It was approximately a couple thousand, but I don't have exact numbers.
Okay. Now, the number that you guys just cited was formal complaints. I assume you had calls that came in as well that would not be logged as a formal complaint, correct?
That is correct.
So what would that number be?
I don't have that.
So I'm guessing it's somewhere above 12.
Definitely.
Okay. A lot above 12 or 13?
We handle calls throughout the entire enrollment period, so we would have had several thousand, several thousand calls. Like, I don't have an exact number. We can get that for you.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Any additional questions? Senator Rose, once again.
So when you did your plan design with the department, when did they know that your remaining Medicare Advantage customers would have to pay twice for their annual deductible?
I don't recall exact dates, but it was something that was discussed in early fall, around the October time frame when we were doing the contract.
Would that have been in the original RFP or your response to the original RFP?
It would not. We responded based upon the benefit plans that were provided.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, Humana HMO.
Good morning. Tiffany Calderon with Humana, Account Executive.
Okay. Ms. Calderon, do you have any pending regulatory issues with the Division of Insurance?
No.
Are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General or any other state Attorney General's office?
No.
Have you received any feedback from Medicare Advantage participants on difficulties obtaining prescriptions, keeping consulting their doctors, or obtaining services from their preferred medical facilities?
We've received about 3,900 calls in February and March. The top call driver was provider verification, verifying providers were in our network. But we certainly received calls in regards to prescription drug coverage. About 11% of the calls were specific to prescription drug, not necessarily an access to care or inability to get a script filled. General questions, typically.
General questions. Did you get calls regarding access to care?
Not I do not have that specific question. In an HMO network, obviously these members are gated and have to choose a provider in our network, unlike an open access situation. So typically we would get calls or there could be questions that members perhaps thought that they could keep their original provider, didn't realize they needed to choose a network provider. So yes, sir, those calls did exist and we worked to resolve those as they occurred.
Okay. Yeah, so on your feedback on these issues, how do you plan on addressing them to ensure individuals can keep their current doctors and have quality care?
In our plan, they cannot necessarily keep their doctor. They would have to choose our plan and choose a doctor in our network, unlike the United Healthcare PPO Open Access Plan. So in our plan, it is if they were using these doctors in our network before, yes, they could keep them. But, you know, we only had about 3,600 people enroll in our plan. Hopefully with the full knowledge, they understood they had to use our providers. If they inadvertently enrolled in our plan thinking they could keep it, we have individually worked with the state, CMS, to move those people out of our plan back into a United plan so that they could keep the doctor that they had prior.
Okay.
There have been a handful of those.
Senator Rose.
When did your customers know, or when should they have known, or when would the department have known that they were going to have to pay the premium, the annual deductible twice?
I know that there were discussions during the fall, the fact that Humana could not waive the deductible on the plan. I was not part of the original RFP process, so I apologize. I can't answer when those conversations first started. I know I became involved in the fall and was aware of those conversations taking place.
I'd be interested for all three of our vendors in knowing when those first conversations happened. Maybe they could get that date back to me and the commission members. Thank you.
Okay, additional questions? Okay, seeing no additional questions, thank you very much for your time. I will move on to other providers. Cigna.
Good morning, I'm Debbie Robertson, National Account Executive with Cigna Healthcare.
Good morning, Carol Lemke, Client Engagement Manager.
Great. What is the length of the current claims hold for preferred providers and non-preferred providers?
Currently it's 10 months for preferred providers and 14 months for non-preferred providers.
Okay. What is the dollar amount of claims currently being held and how does it compare with this time last year?
It's $413 million and it's roughly equivalent to what it was last year.
How the claims hold issue affected your responsibilities under contract, in particular the physicians and hospitals you pay?
It has not affected our ability in terms of our claims processing since we're administrative services only contract. It has impacted our providers, but we've worked with the state for early releases and situations that might impact a member or a provider to try and get money to them outside of the hold time.
Okay. Do you have any pending regulatory issues with any state agency, or are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General or any other state Attorney General's office?
No, we are not.
Do you have any comments regarding the vendor assistance program, and have you made use of it?
We have not made use of it for ASO fees, but at the state's direction, we are pursuing it for possible buy-down of the backlog of claims on the medical side, the medical claims.
Okay. Any questions from the commission? Senator Rose?
Are there any states in particular where you have a really difficult time convincing the providers to accept this, or is it just sort of a hodgepodge piecemeal situation?
There's no one particular state. Sometimes we find that Florida can be somewhat difficult as well as Texas.
So Illinois retirees living in Florida or employees visiting Florida get in trouble down there, have some kind of medical emergency, and then they have the creditors hounding them for 14 months?
Generally, those situations are brought to our attention because they contact CMS and we do an early release of those claims. So we try to minimize and mitigate that as much as possible.
Okay. And we appreciate that very much. I mean, on behalf of our constituents, we really appreciate the work you guys do on that front. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Next up will be Delta Dental.
Good afternoon. My name is Darren Avant, and I'm manager of Key Public Accounts.
Okay. Mr. Vaughn, do you have any pending regulatory issues with the Division of Insurance, or are you under investigation with the Illinois Attorney General or any other state Attorney General's office?
No, we're not.
How has the claims hold issue affected your responsibilities under contract?
It has not. Providers are aware of the hold periods, so it has not adversely affected us.
Okay. Questions from the Commission? Senator Rose?
When you have a provider who agrees to accept Delta Dental, are they allowed to charge more for the service than the reimbursement?
They are not.
They're not allowed, or they can?
You said, I'm sorry, repeat your question?
Yeah. So we get this call in my office quite a bit. If you have a provider who's agreed to accept Delta Dental, are they allowed to charge more for the service than what your reimbursement is?
They're only allowed to charge the applicable deductible and their guaranteed amount. They're not allowed to charge above what's agreed upon.
So part of being in your network means they can't charge the consumer more than what they're going to get via the contract.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I think so too. Representative Tryon.
I have a question similar to that, because we're hearing and experiencing dentists who say you have to pay first, and then they'll reimburse you once they get reimbursed by Delta Dental. Can you comment on that?
Sure. Dentists who are not a part of our network are allowed to do that. Dentists who are contracted with us by contract, they cannot do that.
So if an employee picks a dentist out of your book, they're part of your network, and therefore they can only charge you the deductible, and they have to accept payment. So what happens if a dentist is in your book and that happens?
Then we'll contact that dentist and put them on notice and to make them aware that that's not permitted.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you able to maintain an adequate network of dentists? I mean, because we're hearing from constituents that are employees and part of this plan that their dentists are not taking it any longer. So
there are a few dentists who may opt out of the opt to not be a part of the network, and what we find, those dentists are those that maybe have a large percentage of state employees. But what we do also find is that providers who typically withdraw from the network eventually return to the network, so that's kind of the pattern we've seen. But our networks are still very strong.
Mm-hmm. So all right. Well, so what kind of payment timeline are you for out of network providers? So if somebody submits to you a claim for out of network, what's the time frame to pay that?
The reimbursement time frame currently is 25 weeks for out of network providers, and it's 11 weeks for network providers.
Okay. Thank you,
Senator Severson.
Yeah, maybe just to clarify that the question. I think the question was, if just because a dentist agrees to accept Delta, they'll agree to accept any carrier's insurance. If they're not in the contract, if they're not in the network, then they'll agree to get that payment, but then they can balance bill for any amount over and above that if they're not in the network. If they're not in the network. So it's only in network where there's going to be that agreed pricing. Now, out of network, what payment schedule do you pay at? Are you at the 90th, 85th? What percentile do you pay out of network for your claims?
Well, for the out of network benefit, the benefit schedule that's in place, that's the maximum reimbursement for any given procedure. So it's not a percentile; it's a fixed dollar amount.
On the PPO, on the PPO dental plan, you have a schedule of benefits as opposed to a percentage.
Yeah, in terms of the dental benefit, it is governed by a fee schedule. For out-of-network providers, we will pay up to the stated amount on that fee schedule. For dentists who are in the network, we'll pay a lesser amount depending upon the fees that are in place with those network dentists.
And is that stated amount, is that based on a percentage? I mean, normally out-of-network contracts, they're going to say we pay it 85% of UNC, or we pay 90% of UNC. Is there a percentage that out-of-network that you're paying, how that would work?
That is, in terms of the research that goes behind that, I understand that it's maybe 70 at the 70th percentile level for out-of-network services statewide.
Okay. So I think that gets to the question of the concern some of them have, that when you go to a out-of-network provider, that the reimbursement is at a is at a lower rate than what most private sector contractors are going to have for out-of-network providers. And so for those state employees that go to a dentist that's not in the network, they can anticipate getting a fairly substantial balance bill if you're going to be at the 70th percentile. So if they're concerned about that, then they're going to have to find a provider that's in the network then.
Correct.
Okay. Right, thank you.
We're going to have to be wrapping up soon to get to session. Thank you very much, Delta Dental. So we'll try to move a little quickly here. Magellan Behavioral Health will be followed by Express Scripts, previously Medco, followed by Minnesota Life. Magellan?
Good morning. Yeah. Julie Billingsley, Account Executive with Magellan Behavioral Health.
Thank you very much. Do you have any pending regulatory issues with any state agency, or are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General or any other state Attorney General's office?
No, we do not.
No. How has the claims hold issue affected your responsibilities under contract?
We continue to pay providers in a timely manner.
Okay. Seeing no questions to the Commission, thank you very much for your time. Next up, Express Scripts, previously Medco.
Good morning. Donna Fleig, Senior Director of Revenue Cycle Management at Express Scripts.
Good morning. Tracy Young, Senior Account Executive at Express Scripts.
Okay. Do you have any pending regulatory issues with any state agency, or are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General or any other state Attorney General's office?
No, we are not.
Okay. How has the claims hold issue affected your responsibilities under contract?
It has not.
Have state employee or retiree or dependent participants in your program been unable to obtain prescriptions under your coverage?
No, they have not.
Okay. What changes exist in your renewed contract for fiscal year 2015?
Do you want to take that? Sure. We don't have any, but we did put in some changes for fiscal year 14. I don't know if you'd like to hear those.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for the Commission? Representative Tryon.
You know, this year under Express Scripts, a lot of changes were made in the drug program, drugs that were once offered are no longer offered, and I just kind of wanted that you kind of explain it. If there are two similar drugs that have always been covered and one is being excluded, is that because you've negotiated maybe a preferred price contract with a specific drug company? Generally speaking, doctors like to have choices. They don't, you know, and you kind of are eliminating a lot of choices.
Yes, doctors will lean towards specific drugs. However, Express Scripts offers the same drugs in the same class. What our goal is to save money for both the patients and the clients themselves. So if there's a drug in the same class that does the same thing, we're offering those drugs in order to get those savings passed back to the benefit plans.
What if your provider feels you should be on a different drug due to, you know, issues with the drug or issues with the individual patient not getting the same types of results, even though they get some results? Mm-hmm. How do you evaluate that?
We have processes that a medical exception can override than what is on the formulary if there's something that's medically necessary for a patient.
Mm-hmm. So if you do that, then is the coverage the same for the member?
So if it would be a non-preferred brand, then it could come in at a preferred brand copay. And it also depends on how we contract with the client and how they want the medical exceptions covered.
So in Illinois, how do we want the medical exceptions covered? I mean, let's say you take an injectable diabetic drug, Byetta, and you're allergic to it, and you have no other choice. What do? Then you go to a different one, and you appeal. Is the coverage the same?
So, yes, then the drug can be covered. I mean, yes.
With the same provisions.
Process, yes.
So the member doesn't have an additional charge?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. A very good question. We are being called to session. So, Representative Riley.
Just a point of clarity. Are we talking about brand name generic
substitution, are we talking about some brand name drug, and there might be a similar drug that might be an analog or something that you would recommend? Which scenario are we talking about?
Well, there are generics, and then you have brands, and they can be preferred on the formulary or non-preferred off of the formulary. So it depends. If a member needs a non-preferred, they try to get a medical exception for their reason to take the non-preferred.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sorry for hurrying things up. I want to thank all the vendors for being here today, but we have to adjourn for session. I know. We have no further questions for this commission. We stand adjourned.